Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
And again, you're listening to our special report on KVRF 89.5 FM. RadioFreePalmer.org is the station. Make sure you check us out after our coverage. They play some dang good music 24 hours a day on Radio Free Palmer. So the sirens are going off. It looks like Dallas is probably within sight. I don't think he has on the old Musher's headlamp since it's pretty light right now up here in Alaska, but he is probably within spitting distance of that burled arch. What is the webcam and the live feed showing us right now, Alex?
Well, right now they are showing exactly the finish line under the burled arch, and there's quite a collection of race officials and vets and photographers and videographers. They very, very jealously guard the real estate there in the chute, coming right up to the burled arch and the finish. So it's very hard for journalists to get in there. You need a special pass to be able to register for that. I believe right now they're showing Jen Seavey and Dallas's Dallas's child right there, who are waiting for their dad to come in, and it looks also like the wind is blowing at a pretty good clip. Just looking at the weather report all day today, it seemed like there has been a lot of wind coming out of White Mountain into Nome, and I think that is part of what explains why the trip has taken a little bit longer than I think Dallas and some other folks thought it might take.
Well, you know, with all of the reality shows that are on these days filmed up here in Alaska, I think people have grown accustomed to what our life is like up in Alaska and how we're living things. And even when we talk about particular areas, they feel kind of a connection to it now with all of this TV stuff we have going on. I know there's a show filmed in Nome about some gold prospectors. So they show a lot of that stuff that's going on right there in the part of the city that you're talking about. You talked about it in our first show, just about how small Nome was. It's not a very big city. It's kind of a city at the end of the world, so to speak, literally and figuratively. And that arch area, it's not this huge spectacle. It's just right there in the middle of the street. And, you know, it's not even there year-round. They move it there right before the race. Describe that to us just a minute. And of course, if Dallas crosses that finish line, let's get into that. But tell our listeners what it's like there, right there on Front Street, Front Avenue, whichever it is, with the with that whole area there.
Yeah, it's actually very interesting. There are a couple of hotels. There are several bars and liquor stores. There actually seem to be a fair number of for a town this size. There's a pretty fair number of bars and liquor stores there. A lot of places up north are dry cities. Nome is not, so you can buy liquor there. You can drink. During Iditarod, it's like you're at a big party, and several people have told me that although the bars technically do close and that they stopped serving alcohol at some point, which I believe might be 4 a.m, that you really during Iditarod, if you wanted to, could just sit there in a bar and not drink for the time that they're not selling drinks, but just kind of park yourself there and sit there. It's a pretty amazing experience to be there. People are extremely friendly. You run into people from all over the place, and almost everyone wants to talk to you or wants to share what their experience has been or you know who they're thinking of, who they're rooting for, where they come from, why they're there. It's just kind of an amazing place to be. The right past where the burled arch is, about maybe 50 or 100 yards down the street, is where the mini, I believe they call it the mini convention center is, and they have a big Musher meet and greet that happens, I believe, Saturday afternoon before the banquet. So most of the teams have already come in. Right next to that is where the dog yard is. So after a team finishes, the dogs will come and there's straw and food and everything for the dogs to be taken care of there. The dogs are then shipped back to Anchorage after several days. The winner's dog team is allowed to stay there until the winner leaves, but the other dog teams, I believe, have to go back within 48 or 72 hours.
I know I'm going to be accepting Hugh Neff's dogs. He's currently in 17th place. I'm his good friend and, I guess, handler buddy on this year's Iditarod. And he's planning on shipping his dogs and his sled and things back on Saturday. The banquet is on Sunday. And just to give an idea of what else happens there in Nome at this time, Alaska legend Hobo Jim. If you know anything about Alaska, you know about Hobo Jim. He's playing for the first time up in Nome this year. He's playing at the Board of Trade. You got to check this guy out. He has a song called the Iditarod Song. Check him out on YouTube. This guy rocks the house. We saw him the night before the restart up here in Willow, and that man can surely get your groove on, so to speak, in terms of Alaskan folk music. What's going on in the chute right now? What is the CV family doing? I'm sure there's a lot of excitement there, and I'm sure they're panning right there on him on that video camera.
Yeah, they were just showing them, and they showed the race marshal, and it looks like Dallas is about a mile and a half from the finish. GPS hasn't updated in a while, but it looks like he should be in about 5 or 10 minutes.
So he's cruising right along, and I know we were looking at some video here at the Radio Free Palmer Studios, and, man, he looks like he's cruising right along there on his way into Nome. It's something if you have a dog team that's ran 1,000 miles that can still keep up the Iditarod pace, if you will. And if we can talk about that just for a second, an Iditarod pace is not a blaring 15, 20 miles an hour. It's a slow and steady 6 to 8 miles an hour. So you're not cruising that fast, but you know you're cruising at a decent clip, and if you can continue that pace, and a Iditarod winning pace is about 8.7 miles an hour, so if he can keep up that pace, that 1,000 miles, that's why he's winning. It's that pace and that dedication he has to his dogs and his team.
Absolutely. And you know, a lot of people don't understand also that you're not just sitting on the back of the sled, letting the dogs do all of the work. Frequently, mushers will be kicking to add a little bit of extra speed. They have poles, and they'll be poling and trying to get the sled to move faster, or they'll be jumping off the runners and running alongside with the team. So it's a pretty amazing thing. And Dallas has always said that it's his goal to be the hardest working dog on the team, and during this last leg from White Mountain all the way down to Nome today, he has, every time I've seen shots of him, he's been pulling, he's been kicking, he's been trying to do everything he can to motivate his dogs and make them move as fast as he knows that they can move.
So what happens to the dogs when they get into the chute? I know John Baker last year, his dogs were a little bit spooked with all the hoopla and coverage and media and everything, and they pretty much stopped right there as soon as they crossed under the arch. What do they do with the dogs once they come in? I know they give out the bed of roses or whatever it's called, and they drape them around the lead dog's neck, of course, for the big photo op, very similar to the way they do in the Kentucky Derby and that sort of thing. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, generally, and I've seen this happen, the first time I saw it happen, I thought it was amazing and wonderful, but I've now seen this happen dozens and dozens of times. Almost every time a musher will come in, there will be a crowd of people who will want to talk to him or her and congratulate him or her. And most of the time, the mushers will interact with one or two people and then make a point of going up and down the gang line and talking to and reassuring and petting their dogs and making sure that the dogs know that even though they're now surrounded by dozens or hundreds of people, that everything is okay. And a lot of the mushers will even give the dogs a little bit of a snack before they do anything, including often checking in. And when you get to the end of the Iditarod, there is an official checker who makes sure that you have all of the required equipment, and then you have to sign into the log sheet officially ending your race.
And if we could talk about that just for a second, if he comes in, make sure you interrupt me here. But that mandatory gear is very important. Just at that first checkpoint, it is the last checkpoint in Nome. You have to have an axe, a sleeping bag, dog booties, dog food, a cooker, a way to tie your dogs down, of course, the sled and sled bag. And I'm sure I'm forgetting some other things, but that gear has to be there. And I know Yukon Quest champion this year, Hugh Neff, good friend of mine, had lost his axe or left his axe behind in one of the checkpoints, and it almost proved very costly to him, but he ended up winning the race by a mere 26 seconds, 46 seconds, I believe, in the Yukon Quest. So that gear is just as important, that first checkpoint, as it is throughout the race. So he has to have that. If he doesn't, he will get a penalty, and in this case, could cost him the race, since Ali Zirkle and Ramey Smith are so close behind him.
Absolutely, and the one piece of equipment I just wanted to mention that you didn't mention, I'm sure there's other things, but the one very important piece of equipment that you need to have is the vet book. And so you have a vet book, and the vets at each checkpoint where the dogs are examined will write in the vet book, and if there's any issues with any of the dogs, that will be recorded in there. And you have to have that at all times on the trail.
They also carry a packet of promotional materials and some letters that are postmarked at one place in Anchorage, and then they're postmarked again in Nome. And those become very valuable souvenirs, not only to fans, but mushers as well. You often find the mushers make up a very nice thank you spread, you know, picture and matted frame and all that, with one of these letters that are carried on the Iditarod Trail, that 1,049 miles with the two postmarks. So they do carry those, and it is required that they carry that the entire race in order to finish. They have to have that when they get into Nome. So those become very, very big mementos to the mushers as they carry on in this trek.
Absolutely. And that commemorates in part the fact that for many, many years, mail was delivered in rural parts of Alaska by dog sled. So having the mail be part of what the musher brings up the trail is a way of reconnecting to that old Alaska tradition.
Right. So what's going on the video right now? He's got to be getting close. I would imagine they could see him coming.
Right now, Dallas is coming up off the ice, so he's coming onto Front Street just right as we speak. So he's now on Front Street. There's a large crowd of kids who are running along beside him. He is waving at them. Coming up the business district of Front Street towards the finish line.
So how far is that from coming up off the ice until he crosses under the arch? How far is that in distance? Do you know?
I believe it is somewhere around a half mile.
So not very far at all.
Not very far at all.
Do they have video on him and his dogs themselves?
Yeah, they have video that's currently showing him and one of his dogs, but it's mostly just panning across on him. And now they're pulling out. There's a huge group of kids who are running along beside him and people cheering him. He's kicking off of the runners to give it a little bit of extra speed. Hundreds of people are coming out to take pictures and to high-five him as he goes by. His dogs look really, really good. And there are several trucks that are sort of going parallel to him, which I believe are camera crews.
And you'll often find the mushers jump off the sled about this point and run in with their dogs off of the sled. I know that's been famous over the years for guys to do that. You know, often they'll do that so they can be a part of that with their dogs, running alongside their dogs. I don't know if that's Dallas's style or not, but you often see that with some of the mushers. I know Ramey Smith has been known to do that from time. What is the video looking like with his young family there?
They're currently showing a video from very near the Brilled Arch, and there's an enormous number of people in the street, and the volunteers are trying to push people back so that he'll have a pathway to come up. It looks like it's just about 6 or 8 feet wide, and he has both hands out, high-fiving people on either side, and he's just coming up into the chute right now. With his dogs, and then they're taping it off behind him so that no one can come up into the chute with him. There's a few photographers. The Iditarod Insider camera crew is there, and he is crossing under the Brilled Arch right now.
So there you have it, 2012 Iditarod champion, 25-year-old Dallas Seavey, youngest Iditarod champion in Iditarod history. He's got to feel good. I'm sure his dad and his grandpa will find out very shortly that his son won the 2012 Iditarod. What's going on right now in terms of video?
He's hugging his family. He was just congratulated by the race marshal, Mark Nordman, and there is a truck there. Apparently the Iditarod has a raffle in Nome where they're giving away several of these trucks. So there's a truck right there with him. And now he's going and he's petting and talking to each one of his dogs.
Awesome. Awesome. It's got to be almost a rock star type experience there for everybody involved. You know, I'm sure that things will happen throughout the night. He will be very much celebrated throughout the evening. But, you know, I'm sure, like we've said over and over and over again, the dogs come first. Like you said, they'll often go snack the dogs and, you know, bring them down, so to speak, and then take them over and make sure they're comfortable before anything else takes place. Any other video you care to comment on? And right before we go, let's talk just a little bit before we head off our coverage here about where Allie and Ramey are as well. So what else is going on there on Front Street? Then we'll carry on over for just a couple of seconds to Allie and Ramey.
Well, he's still hugging each of his dogs, going through and talking to each of his dogs. So it's obviously a very emotional moment for him and something really he's worked all of his life to do. It looks like Allie is about 6 miles behind him, which is pretty much where she's been all through the day. So she should probably be coming in within 45 minutes to an hour. And then Ramey Smith is another 5 miles behind her.
So we've talked a lot about it tonight on this show about changing of the guard, becoming the new generation of the Iditarod. With Dallas being the youngest person ever to win at 25 years old, man, what a young man to be able to accomplish this. I know we mentioned it in our first show this evening. What do you think's going to happen now with all of these up-and-comers? You know, you don't have to be a grizzled old veteran. You don't have to be a retired school teacher or have, you know, made your money already before you get involved in dog sledding. This young man at 25 has shown that it can be done at a very young age.
You know, I think Dallas is he's a very articulate spokesman for the sport. I think he's going to be, and he's right now hugging the chief vet. I think he's going to be a really fantastic ambassador for the sport. There's a lot of people who were wishing, I think, even during the day-to-day, that Allie Zirkle would win, since it's been more than 20 years since a woman has won the Iditarod. I do believe that Allie will win the Iditarod at some point, but it looks like this just wasn't her year. But it would Dallas Eavy's a very classy guy, and I would expect that he would be one of the first people to welcome her when she comes in, probably in about an hour.
And it's been a long time since a woman has even been in second place in the Iditarod. So this does say something for the women mushers everywhere. You know, there's no reason not to cheer on Allie Zirkle. She's done an amazing job during this year's Iditarod. She was in the lead for a good portion of the race. She won the Spirit of Alaska Award and the award for being the first one to the coast. So she is a very accomplished musher. She has a lot to be thankful for and to look forward to. I mean, she's a heck of a musher. She's 41 years old, so she is still a little bit of that old guard type musher. But, you know, what a way to come into the Iditarod in second place, and for all the women mushers out there that have been cheering her on for the last 9 days.
Absolutely. And, you know, when Hugh Neff beat Alan Moore, Allie's husband, who was running a lot of the same dogs in the Yukon Quest, he was interviewed, and the interviewer tried to, I think, goad him into saying something negative about Hugh, and Alan Moore just said, you know, we did everything we could, it's just that his dogs were stronger. And I think that is absolutely the case with Allie running many of the same dogs and Dallas's dogs. Dallas's dogs were just stronger this year. A lot of Iditarod champions have said that when you have a really good run, everything goes right for you. Everything goes your way, and things just start falling into place. And that definitely has happened this year for Dallas.
Awesome. So, Alex, we're going to close here. We've been on the air now for over an hour. We only have a half-hour show, so we preempted the music here on Radio Free Palmer. But you know what? This is a special report. I'm very thankful to be here and part of the Radio Free Palmer family. That is awesome. But, man, we're going to continue our coverage tomorrow. We're going to talk about who comes in over the next 24 hours here on Mushing Radio. And, of course, we're going to carry on over the next several days. I know you and I have talked about it. I don't know if we're doing it here in the studio or just on our podcast, but we will be talking at least through Saturday about all of the mushers coming in on Mushing Radio. And then after our coverage of the Iditarod, we will continue to have a weekly mushing show called Mushing Radio right here on Radio Free Palmer. And we're going to have all sorts of guests in the coming weeks. Mushing doesn't end for mushers after the Iditarod. It is a year-long task or journey, lifestyle that we have. So mushing continues on right after Iditarod. Most of us give their dogs a little bit of a break after the racing season, a month or so. And then, of course, we're still going strong up here in Alaska. I run my dogs all year long. We're still out mushing dogs on four-wheelers and whatnot in the early hours of summer mornings when it's still below 50 up here, at least where I live in Willow. So, Alex, any closing words here on this historic event on Mushing Radio? We covered it live. What do you have to say in order to close out our coverage?
I just want to go back to the thing we talked about before, which is that this is a remarkable thing, and I'm sure for Dallas Seavey, as it is for a lot of other people who run the Iditarod, even people who don't finish in the top spot or the top 10 or the top half, that it's the culmination of a dream, and that's very, very important. And I want to just encourage everyone listening, whatever your dream is, to keep going after it. And I want to thank you, especially Robert and Radio Free Palmer, for letting us go into overtime a little bit here.
You're welcome, Alex. It's been a pleasure. I know you and I have known each other for the last couple of years. We met because of Iditarod, and we're not even running the race. But for somehow or another, you and I became pretty good friends, and here we are covering it on the radio. I think that's an awesome thing. I know we've built up quite a bit of listenership and a heck of a lot of fans on Twitter and Facebook. So, you know, I'm glad you're along for the ride, and we've got some good things to come, including, to end right here, a brand new documentary next year about the Serum Run expedition. It's an 850-mile run from Nenana to Nome, very similar to the Iditarod. The founding principle of the Iditarod is based on the Serum Run, and I know you're going to be filming that. I'm going to be part of it. I'm looking very forward to that. So we got a busy year coming up.
Absolutely.
Very good. So this is Alex Stein, my co-host, calling in from Southern California, a balmy Southern California. He is the director and writer of Mush the Movie, a Iditarod documentary. Check him out at mushthemovie.com, I believe, is the website. If not, just check him out on Facebook. Alex, it's been a pleasure. I'll talk to you tomorrow, okay?
Okay, Jack Robert.
So this is Robert Forto for Mushing Radio on Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 FM, radiofreepalmer.org. On the internet, we're streaming live every evening during Iditarod, and then on Sunday or Wednesday night, 7 o'clock p.m. Alaska time. Talk to you guys tomorrow. Goodbye.